Hey, well, welcome to another Rich Martin podcast. And I have been away for quite a while and have not done one of these. And so I wanted to jump straight back in. Some of you have asked me if you've seen me in person or you've sent me a message saying, have you stopped? Definitely haven't stopped. I've just moved to a new city, reorganized some things in my life, and this time I took a little bit of a backseat. But I'm really happy to be back and so glad to be able to bring to you this podcast, which is all around physical buildings. And I don't want to go into too much detail about it, so we're going to jump straight in and enjoy. And it was a really, really fun one to do. Now, bear with me. We were recording in a car as we drove to Norwich, and I explained it all at the beginning. So enjoy. All right. Well, this is definitely the weirdest podcast I've ever done in my life. It is strange because we're in a car with two of my friends, Matt Harrison.
Hello, everybody.
And also Dan Belshaw.
Oi, oi.
There we
go. Nice to see you.
And the reason we're driving in a car is not because I can't afford a studio to get my friends in. It's because we're driving down to an incredible church in England, in Norwich, called Soul Church. And our friend John and Chantel Norman have been running that church for a number of years now. And I've known John since I was, I think, 19, and I'm now 40. And John and Chantel and the team down in Soul Church are about to open up a building, brand new facility. I think it's a £12 million building that they've done, which is really incredible. Probably the largest church building in this nation that has been going on for the last few years. And just an incredible story, really, of church doing amazing things and building. And so I wanted to come to the opening, and I thought, well, if I'm going to go to the opening, I should fill my car with some people who can talk about church buildings and the whole concept of it and what that might look like for them of their context. And so I really wanted Dan Belshaw. You're glad to hear that, Dan?
I am, yeah. Pleasure to be on, Richard.
Thank you. And I wanted Dan because he's going to tell his story soon, but they're doing an amazing building, an amazing church in the north of England, and are also about to embark on a building project. And then I also wanted to bring my friend Matt Harrison, because Matt and me have worked together for many years now, but he is a great theologian thinker, and I wanted his input on buildings. So the kind of idea is this, and whether I do this in two parts or not, but the kind of idea is that you're going to get the thoughts of these two and myself on the way down to seeing the opening of this amazing building. And then we're going to do one on the way back to just kind of capture our thoughts of what do we see, what's God done, what's it like. And if you enjoy it, great. If you don't, switch off now is the kind of rule. What do you reckon, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, who knows where it'll go?
I don't think we do, do we?
open for wherever.
Whilst we're on it then, and Matt's driving. If you're wondering who's driving this thing, it's not me. Matt is driving, technically legally, but he's driving my car, which is the longest story of us essentially not having a decent enough car to go all the way to Norwich between three of us. Anyway, Dan, give us a little bit of information. Yourself and Holly, your wife, you're running a church over in the north of England, and just tell us a brief overview, and including that, the journey of kind of building and what that looks like for you.
Yeah, sure. So me and my wife, Holly, we always had it in our heart that we would lead or plant a church or something at some point. And it would have been, I was around 23 years old, and we just really felt like God was calling us, and it felt like a pretty crazy story for us to step into. You know, we were dead young. It was, again, not really the plan, but we felt like God was asking us to step in. And so we got appointed, or I got appointed to Pastor Light Church, which is just between Preston and Blackpool in the northwest of England. And yeah, really, the church had gone through a lot, so there was a lot of turning around to do, a lot of healing to do, but there were some amazing people, and you know, God was really moving. And when we first came in, obviously I stepped in September 2019, so I had 6 months just before COVID
mental
hit, which was yeah, definitely a learning curve. I feel like the whole time I've been here, it's been just a steep learning curve. But in that, the church has never had a building. The church is like 40 years old, you know, gone through various names, but we stepped in. It was called Light Church. And yeah, we just had a big heart for really asking God, what is this? What could it be? And we rebranded. We got some good mates in from Manchester who came and helped us out. We kicked it all off. and then really stumbled into this opportunity where there was some land that came available, some like real prime land as well in on the Faroe Coast, and it was worth, you know, near double what we were being offered for this land. And so we put in an offer in 2020, put it to the church, and we've just gone on this amazing faith journey of, you know, really taking the church as a family on it. And and we completed on that land 2 weeks ago.
Come on.
So we managed to raise about £500,000 across that time. And just to put it into context, like, we're not big enough to require, you know, buying land and building a church. It did very much feel like Noah building an ark when it wasn't raining.
Right.
And there were some big moments in that where we had to really just ask God, are you still in this? And every step of the way, we just kept looking at each other saying we really shouldn't be here. But really, we were. So
it's amazing. Like, you know, Dan invited me down to go and speak, and it just so happened to be the same weekend. It was like, you know, it wasn't planned like this, but it was the same weekend that, you know, you were able to announce to the church, Dan, that you'd raised all this money. And it was, you know, I remember coming back from there and I said to a few friends who are building church, like, what Dan and Holly have done is remarkable, because, you know, you're 28, aren't you, Dan? Is that what you are?
28.
28.
Yeah.
And you've managed to journey. How big would the church be now, would you say?
So I reckon.
Obviously, massage it because we're pastors. So.
Well, as in pastor figures, we probably have about 200 people who call Light Church home. But our sort of, I would say we're about 150.
Amazing. It's an amazing,
you know, in real figures.
And so to raise, you know, a couple of hats off to yourself, Dan, to one, transition a church over from leadership and do that at an age when you shouldn't really be doing it, or maybe it hasn't been well-worn path of that, is just amazing for you. And also to then lead them into the steps of where the Holy Spirit's led you to take a piece of land and to then raise, you know, £500,000 to be able to go and purchase and to carry all of that. And I know you've got an amazing team around you with a what would be known as, you know, a good sized church, but it's not big to be raising £500,000 to be able to go in. It's just, it's really, really inspiring, mate. Really inspiring that you've done it and you're doing it. And I was totally inspired being there, and you're this like hidden gem that no one knows about. And so if I can get you out to my 7 followers, mate, you're going to be all right. And just before we wrap up on there, Dan, like, just so I know the metrics of it, did you raise £500,000 over 40 years, or is it £500,000 in the last 5 years, or so, what's that look like?
Yeah, good question. We sold, you know, like a manse or like a vicarage type building. We had like a house, and maybe 8 years ago, so before I was there, they sold that. So there was about 170 in a
right,
pot.
Right, so you walked into a pot of
cash. To a pot of about 170, yeah. Wow. And then really from there, we just, you know, a few churches partnered with us to give us, you know, 10,000 or a couple thousand. One church partnered with us, hugely generous, and gave us 50,000. But
wow.
The rest of it has just come from just really, like, early church style sacrificial giving. Like, there was someone who, you know, sold land. There was someone who sold a watch off their wrist. There was an old couple who liquidated some retirement asset in a painting that they'd bought years ago for their retirement.
This is so special.
Just stuff where you feel really like, I mean, put it this way, there's a lot of people in the Christian world who people would look at and say, oh, they have selfish ambition. I'll tell you one thing, there is nothing more sobering than seeing people sacrificially giving to something that you feel God has led you to. And it really drove me to a place of humility of me, myself, the board, Holly, just really, really seeking God and saying, God, if this is not you, then we don't want it.
Yeah,
I'm not a, you know, more buildings equals more success. You know, I want to see people, you know, step into relationship with Jesus and see their lives transformed.
Yeah.
But we just kept asking God, are you still in this? Because if you are, then we'll step forward. And it was, the money came from unlikely places, the timings of things. I just have so many stories where you just, it's only God.
And so let me just ask a little bit around that as well then. So, you know, I think from the conversations we've had previously, you've wanted, the church has had in its spirit, in its heart, in its DNA, to have a venue, a home. It was going to go on the same piece of land. They were going to be buying a bit of a smaller piece of property. What is it in you and the team, and why is it that you want a building? Mm. Why not, you know, do as the early church did and just meet in homes? And why tie yourself up with the burden of a building?
Yeah. No, I like that question.
On the ropes here, is what I've just said to Matt. I'm only joking, but I'm throwing controversial things out here that like people would say.
No, definitely. I think it's. It's a good question, because for me, I actually believe that if you were to go into most churches today and you say to people, you know, you would hear this phrase being said, like, we are the church. It's the people that are the church. And I do totally agree. It's a biblical, you know, biblical statement for sure.
Right.
But if I go out to the community and I say, what is the church? They're not pointing at you and me. They're going to point at the closest steeple or right. old-looking building that
right.
they can see.
Right.
And I really like, I think it was John Henry Newman, the Anglo-Catholic cardinal, that said this. And he said, the church building is like the office of Christ on earth. Mm. And to me, I just think there's something really significant about a tangible sort of bricks and mortar. It's a display to the local community that we are a part of this. It's a physical, tangible, like, reminder to people, a symbol of hope, a symbol of... wow, these people believe enough in this thing to be able to do that. And then on a very practical note, church just requires space.
Right.
And I mean, you could go a bit more sort of creative and philosophical, and I fully believe in sacred space and a place where, you know, you go down the Celtic route of the thin places and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Like, I'm all for those places the presence of God just seems to lean on. But really, on a practical level, we're just hiring buildings and chucking money into people's hands that we can barely use, venues at certain times. Like, we're very rural. Like Richie mentioned, we're northwest England. So, you know, the sort of sheep and cow ratio to humans is a lot higher than maybe in your city. So there's not many venues. So in a very practical way, we want to create a space for the ministry of the church to be able to flourish and grow and to reach people where they're at in the community that we're at.
So. And that journey, I mean, it's so beautiful listening to you describe it, Dan, and also I've been. And so, you know, you're not describing something that I've not seen or been on a small journey with you on as well, of hearing your heart for it. What was the decision making in what is the building you want? What's the size? What you want it to accomplish? You know, how have you navigated some of those things? And just for anyone wondering, they haven't actually got a building yet. They've bought the land, and they bought the land for $500,000, and you're now gonna have to go on the journey of building something on that land. But the land's a big piece of land, right? You've not gone for a small 50-seater, you know, no shame in that. If anyone's doing that, amazing. But what's made you choose something, and what size are you wanting to put on there, and the metrics, just the metrics around a building?
Do you mean in a practical sense?
Practical, yeah.
So I guess there's two sides of this that I'll speak on. The first one, I think, is, you know, I'm not so much of the opinion that the church should be led like the Moses model. You know, Moses heads up the mountain, comes down with the ABCs, and everyone just goes along.
Right.
I'm not saying that that's totally wrong, because I think there's an element of it that God does really speak, you know, to leadership and honors the sort of the mechanisms of the church. But I do think there's something about the fact that I had to kind of like answer up or measure up to this vision that I had in me. And it was a weird one, because I was almost like testing myself as this personal ambition. Like, my background is in design and media. And obviously I love beautiful things and I love creating things. And I was kind of like, am I just coming up with this version of a building because I love architecture and I would love for a beautiful building to be on the Foul Coast. And I kind of just had to rely on our mechanism of eldership in the church, and I really believe it's a biblical model. And I almost was leaning on the team to kind of, I was sharing the vision that I had, and it wasn't a car salesman, oh, wouldn't it be good if. It was more a case of like, guys, this is what I see when I fall asleep.
Dan, you sounded like me then.
Yeah, right.
He actually did a great impression of you there, Rich.
You're saying I'm a car salesman?
I mean, you would be a good one.
I think I would.
If you went for
it. If I ever needed a job, that's what I'd do.
But yeah, so it wasn't a case of like, guys, I've got an idea. It was like, hey, this is what I'm seeing when I'm daydreaming, and this is what I'm seeing when I'm drifting off to sleep at night, and you know, little things like that. So I kind of had to lean on them and just say, this is what I see. What do you think about that? And so that was the first side of it. That was kind of practically how I went discerning about the project. And then I almost had to take responsibility and say, like, you know, in line with our vision, what's God asking us to do? You know, what's some of the things that he's graced us to do? And then the facility has to be it has to facilitate the vision. It's not the other way around.
Right.
The vision can't facilitate the venue. That's just a waste of everyone's time and money. It's got to facilitate what God's asked of us. So practically, we asked ourselves, okay, where do we think we're going to grow? What's the area like? What's the land size? You know, what other things could we do with the venue? So very practically, we've gone for a comfortable 500 seats.
Right.
In the sense of comfortable, in the sense of that's quite a conservative amount.
Premium economy is what you're saying.
Yeah. To put it this way, our architect said, I've gone off American measurements. So I don't know what he means by that. But
for any in America listening and you don't understand that, we're just going to move on, Dan. Yeah?
Well, I don't know if he's gone for, you know, recliner seats.
Oh,
you know,
right,
we're talking like
go.
View
yeah,
cinema
yeah.
style, you know. Okay. But then again, we could fit a lot more in if we needed. And then, you know, we want it to be a place of creativity and to empower people in what they've been called to do as well. So I don't want the building so much to be just pigeonholed to this is the kids' room and this is the, you know, we want it to be a space that lives and breathes according to the changing seasons and nature of the church. So yeah, we've gone quite it feels like, imagine an art gallery meets a museum, or like a modern museum meets a CV church. That's kind of the aesthetic and the experience of the building. It should live and breathe really as the church moves. So
and kind of last question, Dan, because I could listen to what you say a whole lot longer, because you know, for someone who's 28, you hold all these things in really good tension. I love yours and Holly's passion, which is, I've built over in that area of the world and the people group are very, very different, and you've embodied that and you've not tried to bring something to them in a style of church. You've just done it in a really subtle yet strong way, which is what I love about going to visit your church. How have you done that with the building? How are you not imposing on your people some sort of Audi showroom that is going to, you know, I don't know, wrong thing, but how are you going about making sure, you know, you've just described something which is quite countercultural to that area of the world, like in the sense of, you know, you don't have people trekking to your town for the arts. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In your church, you have people who are artistic and people who have this appreciation for a way of living and a life that looks different, one with Christ, but also how they express themselves with their creativity. So how have you done that? How have you balanced that side of stuff?
Yeah, well, I think there's a foundational belief in me that every human being has a creativity to them.
Mm.
And being totally honest, I mean, like at one point in history, Blackpool, which is only, you know, 6 to 8 miles away from where we are, was the epicenter of, you know, like tourism in the UK.
Yeah,
and there was all of these shows and, you know, there's the Winter Gardens and all this stuff. So there's this almost foundational view in us as a people that there's almost a renaissance of art and beauty and stuff that's required. Like, people have let dreams die and have let things die in the Northwest. And, you know, and I'm not one of those who's always, you know, moaning at Southern people about, oh, the North, you know.
Right.
But I do think that there is a big difference. And I think there's a heart in me that I would love to see a building that could give our young people and our kids some vision to see that, hey, these careers and these opportunities and these gifts and these things that you've got inside of you, there's a place for them around here. You don't have to move to the big places. Not there's anything wrong with that, but I want to, it's almost like, to answer your question, really, it's a balance of what is this community already, and then what's the gift that we can sort of like inject into that.
Wow.
And
like raise up the standard, push the boundaries, but not to a point where it's extreme, but just how do we just push it that it pushes people into new spaces.
Yeah, definitely. There's that quote, isn't it? It says, like, the rising tide lifts all ships.
Right.
And I kind of see us as a church in our community. And we're not trying to change the world. We're just trying to change the place that we're in. And I think if we can be that rising tide, and a friend of mine said to me recently, you know, the transcendental, so like goodness, truth, and beauty, it's almost like society is rejecting of truth. They're skeptical of goodness, but beauty is still the way in.
Oh,
and I
beautiful.
Think for us as a church, we want to create a beautiful building that isn't, like you said, a Porsche or an Audi showroom, you know, or a flat pack building that you could see anywhere.
Yeah.
We want it to be somewhere that says, yeah, that belongs in this place, yet it looks like it doesn't. So there's a paradox to it that I think will give the future leaders and the future business leaders and the future politicians almost a tangible expression of what could be in them. It's almost like a giant prophetic message of, hey, there's hope still, and we care enough about this community to build something of value here.
Wow. Oh, Dan, I love this. Well, also driving at the helm of this, at the helm of this transport, the VW Touran, we've got Matt Harrison, who doesn't have a microphone in his hand. He's got a steering wheel instead. And so I'm going to hold the microphone. Matt, could you kind of weave from what Dan's just said and shared his heart and a little bit of his journey that his team and Holly have been on? Could you kind of unpack to us, as well as drive? We're going left here, Dan. sorry, Matt. It's Matt's driving. Could you kind of unpack to us a little bit of kind of your version from history and theology and kind of biblical viewpoint of church? Could you kind of give us your take on all of that?
Yeah, of course. And first thing to say is that Rich is looking very nervous, everybody, because I'm driving his car. I've driven in South Africa for a lot longer than I have in the United Kingdom. But we're doing okay.
You're doing brilliant. And I just don't want you crashing a 15-year-old VW Touran with 120 on the clock. I got a family to cart around, Matthew.
Oh, no, we'll take good care of it. But, I mean, listening to Dan and like everybody who's listening to this podcast, this is my first time hearing all of this from Dan as well. And, I mean, the first thing to say is just hats off to Dan and the work that he's doing. At 28 years old, I don't think that I was, you know, in a position to be doing what he's doing and building like that. I think that there's an incredible level of spiritual maturity there, and just really excited by what's going to come of all of this. And so, yeah, really inspired to hear that. I think on our way to see this new building, listening to Dan's story, you know, one of the things that I'm so aware of in Europe, and especially in the United Kingdom, is that we see a lot more church closures than churches building, right? Like you drive down a main street and you see churches for sale. These things are built in the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s. Beautiful buildings, testaments of people's whole community's faith. They just speak of villages and towns of sacrifice, people wanting to establish something that would last through the ages. And then you see them being converted into houses. And so I love this kind of thing. I love seeing churches building. I think it's good for not just us as the people of God, it's good for our communities. And that's what we historically see throughout Europe. That's what we historically see even in the Bible, is that the actual physical building, if you look at the temple, is not just for the benefit of the people when they go to worship, but actually it benefits their entire lifestyle. It benefits everything that they're building in the kingdom. It has an impact on what their actual identity is. And it's the same thing with our church buildings here. You know, look at how things like cathedrals have impacted the history of not just the Christian faith, but like Dan was talking about, it's impacted art, it's impacted culture. It's an expression of so much more than just one group of people's faith. There's something special in the physicalness of what we build as the church.
So taking that thread, which, you know, again, is really special to hear, there is the also the huge narrative in the New Testament, which is the temple, you know, the curtain was torn in two. Yeah. Christ, you know, set us free from the structures and the systems and these buildings that have, that you've just referenced, you know, have created new structures, and we now serve new religious structures and, you know, all of that that goes with it. And so, you know, how where does all that fit? Because, you know, God does not dwell within buildings, unless you're about to tell me he does. And, and I need to quickly divert the podcast. But he dwells within humans, and that is the beauty of the cross. So in one form, you know, they you know, everyone says, I want a church like Acts, the book of Acts, which I always think, so you're asking for persecution, because that's
exactly thank you, that's my point.
The secret ingredients that no one wants, the secret sauce. And it's like they were freed from all of the systems, and they were freed from having to, you know, gather within these buildings. They went house to house and all of that kind of stuff. So why you know, why would Dan waste 500,000 on a piece of land, and why would John put 12 million into something in Norwich, and anyone else who's listening who's building, why do all that, you know?
Absolutely. And that argument that you've just raised, by the way, I 100% agree with it, that the temple of the Old Testament, the physical building, is not what we are building today, right? We, as the people of God, we are the Church of Jesus Christ. And Dan put it in a way that I actually hadn't thought of before, which is, that's how we think as Christians. But there is a very real, important reality that the communities that we are seeking to reach don't look at you and me as people sitting in Starbucks or wherever, you know, if we go for a walk or whatever we do. They don't look at us and see, that's the church.
Mm.
If somebody wakes up one day and says, you know, I need help, I'm going through this incredibly difficult situation, this tragedy, but I remember that my nan was talking to me about, you know, this Jesus, and I've never darkened a church door, but something draws them to a place where they go, I need the church.
Mm.
They're going to come to our buildings. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that the buildings have to be these amazing things, but what I'm saying is that there is an element to which the identity of the church, to the culture around us, is tied to the buildings that we build. So I think that's a really important point. Having said that, I think that what you raise with the Acts 2 question is that, yes, everybody wants to return to an Acts 2 type of church, but we're not in the first century anymore. It's 2024. You know, we've had 2,000 years of development as the church has moved from being this underground, hidden, first as an offshoot of the Jewish faith, where they were actually still meeting in the temple courtyards. They were still going to the place where the Jewish people were worshiping,
right?
But they were meeting in that space, and they were proclaiming Jesus.
Mm.
And then when they got chased out of that, and when Paul carried the gospel to the Gentiles, they began to meet in the synagogues. But then Christianity took this huge turn away from its Jewish roots, in the sense that it became a very Gentile-oriented faith. And as it spread through the Roman Empire, we know that it began to be persecuted. So they moved into homes in order to protect. I was actually watching this this video the other day, this great guy that talks about theology on social media, and he pointed out that it was so bad that you couldn't just visit a church in the first and second century when the persecutions were taking place in Rome.
Right.
You couldn't just bring somebody. They interviewed visitors to work out if they were spies or if they were actually interested in being learning about Jesus and becoming baptized.
Sounds like some churches now, Matt.
We're not going to talk probably, about which ones.
Probably easy to get into one of those churches you've just described.
But, right, so these churches, right, first and second century, the church, out of necessity, is meeting in people's homes because they're available. It's easy to do so, but it also protects them.
Hmm.
But then by the end of the third century and the fourth century, when Constantine comes to power and Christianity becomes the religion of the Roman Republic, the Roman Empire, there's no more need to be in homes out of necessity. So what we need to remember is that we've got at least 1,600 years of buildings being erected by people who some, yes, wanted to build the biggest building, to be the best person on the block, and they maybe had these weird ulterior motives. But for the most part, when you look through the pages of history, the actual people who built the churches, the laborers, the ones who gave the money, the ones who designed them, they did it as an expression of their faith.
Wow.
And the buildings themselves are built to glorify God. And so we're now in the space where you're at. There's a lot of questions. Should we be building these buildings? Should we be spending so much money? My wife talks about church buildings, and she says at the end of the day, it's just a place where people gather. And yes, it is. But I was raised an Anglican.
Come on.
And in Anglicanism and a lot of the older traditions, we know that buildings, we talk about them as these sacred spaces that Dan mentioned. You know, they're built with a purpose, not just for the saints to gather, but the very stones to glorify God. That's why you walk into a cathedral or you walk into any old church building, your eyes are drawn upwards to the heavens. And you're reminded that this life, me, I am so small.
Right.
And in those spaces, there's just something special.
Yeah, and I think, oh, look, there's a rainbow, guys. No one can see it that's listening to the podcast, but just to the left there, must be God's blessing on this conversation.
Hallelujah.
Guys. Is that what we're going to say? I think we're all on journeys of all sorts. I've been involved in lots of different buildings, from purchasing and seeing them renovated to mega church in the UK to renting of buildings now in a church we're trying to help plant in our city of York. I think listening to you, I think the difficulty is that, you know, these buildings do hold great memories, and then there's this expectation when people turn up to them that God can do something here. And that's not necessarily wrong. It's wrong if you think God is only here, because we've missed the main crux of the cross. But do you know, we have a place, friends of ours have a place in Wales that we often go to, and we know that when we get there, it's like, we're on holiday. And it's not that there's anything particularly different about their house to our house. It's a little bit bigger and so on and so on. But it's just that, we're on holiday mode and we're here. And I don't, it's maybe a poor example, but it's, I think sometimes with buildings, what is fantastic about them is they hold great memories of, I remember when I was down, I walked into this place and God did something. I remember when I was unable to get through that season and this happened. I remember a night where we all gathered together and we didn't stop praising for hours. And it's difficult to take that away from a building and go, yeah, but it's just God within us. It could have happened anywhere. It's like, it could have, but it happened here.
Yeah.
And isn't it fantastic that all the servers turned up and the kids' church was on so we could carry on worshiping? And isn't it fantastic that the parking was available because we weren't then fighting for whatever, and we're all able to have a lovely coffee in our hands, whatever, right? I'm going a little bit too far, but there's sometimes it's easy to mix, to get a bit brutal and go, well, God can be anywhere, it's just a building. But it's like, it's not, it holds special memories for us. Or, you know, I'm taking my kids around places in York at the moment and I'm saying to them, oh, this is the church that I grew up in. And I'm telling them stories of that building and what happened there and what God did to me and our youth ministry in the bank that's above a shop. And and so I think there's that element to it all as well.
Absolutely right. And again, it depends where you come from. So I come, as I mentioned, coming from an Anglican tradition, where we actually do, in the Anglican tradition, the Catholic tradition, many traditions of the Christian faith will actually bless, and we sanctify these spaces. And that's why, you know, there's big questions around church buildings and cathedral buildings that are used for parties and raves. I saw an article the other day where the cathedral in Canterbury was used for this rave. And the big question is, well, should it be? And you kind of go, well, it's a building, but it's also, there's something special. But some Christians do believe that it's a sanctified space. The actual stone is sanctified. And whatever anybody thinks about that, I like to look at it as though you got to remember the testimony. That's what you're describing, Rich, is you're describing that the experiences in that space, what sanctifies it, what makes it special, is that there is a testimony of the work of salvation that is coming out of that place. It's a result of the community that meets in that place. And I think that it's really easy to overlook.
Good time to pause because we're on a complex part of the road and we need you focusing. Blooming long drive to Norwich. Dan, what are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I really resonate with what Matt was saying. And it just made me think two sides of it is, I think it's Irenaeus in their church history talks a lot about like the incarnation. And I think a lot of recent, I'll talk recent in the sense of 150 years or so, we've rejected a lot of the physical, tangible matter. And we've said it's all about the spirit, it's all about the soul. And I think we've in a sense, it's almost like as the Puritans pulled art out of the churches, it's like our recent, like our doctrine is so much more focused on the spirit and we reject the physical. And it's, I think it's, there's a bit of a resurgence recently, you know, with people talking a lot more about your physical body and your, you know, your health and all of that stuff. But it kind of makes me think that like God cared enough about matter that Jesus stepped into human matter.
Oh, that's so good, Dan.
And like, there's something really profound about the fact that, you know, Jesus worked with his hands for 30 years. Like, again, Irenaeus, I think it's him that says that, you know, that which is not assumed cannot be saved or something along those lines. Mm. I just think there's something in that, that church buildings are the physical, like, again, it's in the physical realm. Mm. And there needs to be a voice, there needs to be something in the physical realm that you know, points people that, you know, aside from us humans, obviously, but that points people to Jesus and to the glory of God and to fill people with a sense of wonder. Mm. And the other side of that is from more like an anthropological sense. I think that, you know, I said to Matt earlier, if you went to a spa and you know, led down on the table for a massage and next minute they start blasting heavy metal music,
yeah,
you might be like, oh, it's just about the massage. It's like, no, it's the atmosphere too. Yeah, like, yeah, it doesn't mean that the atmosphere takes precedent over the massage, but I can't believe we talk about massages on here, but you get what I'm saying. For some reason, we're really afraid to talk about atmosphere and talk about architecture because it's, oh, but we don't want to put that before Jesus. It's like, hey, I think, you know, I know in the past that a lot of this is a pendulum,
right,
reacting, right, to, right, the last, say, 50 years of going a bit overboard sometimes. But I just think, you know, you wouldn't want heavy metal music playing in a spa, and we wouldn't want the gospel of Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we have the best message in the world. Right. Let's, you know, put it in a little brown warehouse that, you know, I just don't think there's any honor in that. So I just, in a way, I think church buildings are a helpful frame. They're not the only frame, but they're a helpful frame for people to almost understand. It's a context to understand what we're teaching.
Well, it's so good. What are your thoughts on that, Matt?
Yeah, I think that I have a lot of thoughts on it. I'm trying to think of the thoughts that are relevant to actually staying on topic. We can go on a lot of tangents here. But it's an interesting point that Dan raises, which is we have moved very much to the space of everything is spiritual. And yes, everything is spiritual. But we got to remember when Jesus returns, for example, he's returning to an actual real world. We're going to live in real bodies. Like God is redeeming everything that is physical. And so I think that there's this real importance that we consider. Maybe somebody's listening to this and kind of going, well, you know what, I still think that church under a tree outside, you know, in South Africa we can do that a lot, not so much in England, but church under a tree outside is just as good as in a multi-million pound venue. And yes, in its essence, the preaching's the same, the message is the same, but I think that we need to really come back to that place of going, well, what value do we place on what it means for us to come together, the location that we do that, and how we treat it, how we present it, how we dream about it, what we look for in it? Because as much as we want the body of Christ, which a lot of the conversation around that just means the people of God, to be beautiful, the beautiful bride of Christ, you know, and we got to be spiritually pure, yes. But then I want to take pride in the place that I attend on a Sunday. And not pride because, oh, look at my church, but pride in I can think of this as the house of the Lord. It's like, you know, it's an old school way of just saying, this is somewhere that is special to me. And when I come here, I'm worshiping, and it's this, I'm getting all of these benefits from the community that's gathered in this place, but it's beautiful and it represents something that I can't quite put into words because I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's there and it's in front of me and I'm a part of it.
Nice, nice.
No, I love that. I was just going to say, for those listening who don't have church buildings and who feel like, because I've been here where you look at everyone else and their amazing venues and all of this, I really don't want anything that I'm saying specifically to make it sound like for you to be honoring with the physical space you've got, you need to have multi-million pound building project right. going on. I think it's more of a heart thing or a more of an intentionality. Like, we've rented venues, you know, some of them have been dog rough, like just like horrible venues, you know. But we still have had the same intentionality. Like, how can we do the best that we can with this space? So the space we meet in right now is a sort of corporate hospitality suite in a football stadium. And, you know, we don't set up tons of lights and we don't, you know, try and overstretch the team. We do the simplest setup we can, but in the best way we can. So, you know, if you've not got a building, I don't want it to be like, oh, well, one day we can take, you know, some care and some intentionality. It's no, I just ask yourself, what is the best that we can do? The most honoring thing, the most, like, how can we create a space that people genuinely feel like opening up their hearts?
And to add to that, Dan, you talk into the area of, you're preparing a people to go into a building, and you've been doing that for many years, and you're preparing, you know, you are taking a people group into a building, and so you're not waiting for a building to do a work in your people. No. You know your intentionality is, we're growing as a community, the vision in us is growing, the people that we're reaching and helping within our community and externally who maybe don't yet know Jesus, but through the workplaces and through the schools and through the friendships that our community has, they're being reached. There's this preparation of the people to move into a new season, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we never want it to feel like the promised land. Like, if history's taught us anything, the decline of the Methodist Church happened when they started building and buying buildings.
Oh, tell us more.
And
then.
I just,
because you are a Methodist.
We're free Methodist.
You're
yeah,
free Methodist.
So
yeah.
Slightly different in sort of core doctrines, but we just have a I don't know. Just it's almost like we have a real desire to see the building as a tool, as
yeah,
a, something to facilitate. And so we've never talked about the building as, oh, one day when we finally, you know, lay our tents down and move into our homes, or, you know, one day when we finally rest our, you know, that's not it at all. Like, the vision of our church is very simple. It's just for all to find home. And that's the case for when we're in the rented venues. That's the case for when we're at school, the school gate, or we're in work or whatever. It's, we are in this world to point people towards Jesus. And I think the preparation in the church really is, we're going to be a church, you know, that runs with the mission of Jesus and are the hands and feet of Jesus, no matter where that is. So the building will never be a resting place for the church. I don't want us to get to a place where it starts declining because we've quote unquote made it, you know. So yeah, I don't want that to be the story of our church, you know, amazing story of faith and then just like burnt out because we settled. I think it's got to be a tool. We've got to always have vision beyond the physical tool, beyond the vehicle.
That's amazing. What's for yourself, Dan, in terms of, you know, practically, you know, 3 weeks ago you bought that land, it's now physically yours, you know, you own that land. You know, you don't have to divulge to listeners here before you do your church and your people, but with whatever you're able to give us, like, what is the next steps in your head? Like, you know, because you've got the land now, you know, we're driving now to see John, who, you know, through miracle after miracle has, you know, built a building that has cost 12 million to build, plus in terms of what it is. Unless you've not told me, I don't think you've got 12 million in the bank, Dan.
No, we don't have 12 million in the bank.
Okay. So what's the plan?
Yeah, so the plan really is the same as we've been so far. Is we've always felt like, hey, we shouldn't be here, but we are. It's on a sort of, you know, we're just going to follow the voice of God. We'll take the next step. We'll keep shuffling forward. So that's kind of like a meta version of it. We're just going to keep going. I don't know. I actually don't know what the whole story will look like.
Right.
We've just got a sort of an end picture, and we've taken the immediate steps that are in front of us. So the next steps are we'll go through with our sort of full planning applications and, you know, make sure that all the designs are in line with, you know, the local authorities and all that sort of stuff, all the important slash boring slash you gotta do it. And then we're gonna go on a little bit of a journey. Some pastors will say the phrase, you know, to their congregations, hey, the money's in your pocket.
I
kind of had that sense when it was the land. It almost felt like the church needed to put a bit of a stake in the ground. Now we weren't banging on about it every Sunday. I was very, very intentional with, you know, the congregation, that it didn't feel like, oh, we serve Jesus and this building project.
Wow.
It was, I actually barely mentioned it on a Sunday.
Right.
We updated people via email, and we kind of told the story a little bit and shared at, you know, various different places, but it was going on in the background, really. So with the actual building, I think we're going to just be real sensitive to where, you know, that some of the doors that God opens. We probably have around £3 million to raise. I don't think that will be, you know, 55 giving days or whatever. I don't think that'll be the story. I think, if I'm naive enough to say this out loud, I just think there's a lot of people with finance out there just looking for causes to give it to.
Yeah.
And I don't think the church has always done a great job of making people feel like money's well spent.
Right.
And so we're just going to be good stewards of the money we do have currently. We're never going to lose our generosity throughout this process. So we have a giving fund as a church, and we help support church plants. And
amazing.
We gave away about 14,000 last year out of our sort of income.
Wow.
And that's something I hope one day we can give away millions, because, again, in this process, I mean, I am 28, and I do totally understand some of the pastors who've said these things to me, but I have been called naive many times.
It's a gift.
Yeah,
it's
I'll take it.
You need to be naive to have faith.
Well, yeah, it's genuinely felt. Some people have said to me, look, you don't want to be running before you can walk. And it's like, we've not even been born yet. Never mind, we're not crawling yet either. We're just going with whatever God's got. So, I just think we're going to steward with what we got. We're going to keep being generous. We're going to step through the doors that open up. Especially after all the listeners to your podcast, you know, message in saying, here's £1 million, then I'll, graciously accept.
But you know there's a fee. I put a fee on it as well.
A commission, yeah.
It's only 4%.
Well, so I think there's going to be a little bit of, I'm going to have to tell the story a little bit, and rightly so. I think if, you know, I shouldn't feel, and you do as well, like I do feel like this sometimes. I don't want to be that car salesman being like, who wants to be the latest donor to our project? But at the same time, I feel like God's given me a responsibility here, and I do have to own the journey that he's got us on.
Yeah.
And that journey looks like, this is the story so far.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine who has been involved in fundraising just said, don't be afraid to ask, but also don't be offended when they say no. Just smile, say thank you, and move on. And it's so it's going to be a learning curve for sure. I think you know, the more we talk about it, the more you'll be on the journey with us. And I just know this. I don't know how it will happen, but I know that I will one day tell the story of the amazing provision of how this building was built.
Oh man! And Dan, if I could encourage you, just keep staying. If the word naive is a negative connotation in your head, it's a beautiful connotation when it comes to the things of faith, where you just trust and, you know, and just naively trust that God will come through, and naively trust that even though everything looks like it's against you, he's going to do it. And so it's your biggest weapon. May I ask a question, Matt? We're going to wrap up here, but what we're driving, as we said, just in case anyone's wondering, we are in a car on the straightest road in England to go to Norwich. What is it that you are looking forward to being there? So it's for everyone who knows, John and Chantel opening this building up tonight. It's it'll be a big celebration, first time of a public worship gathering in here. There's a whole story. Go to Soul Church, see it. Their building burnt down many years ago, and they've come and they've rebuilt it, and it's back. So what are you excited about?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, like, the most exciting thing is this is something that is, it's not just good for Soul Church. It's not just exciting for Soul Church. It's good for the church, and it's good for the kingdom in the UK and in Europe. Like, this is a blessing to all of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, Paul says, we rejoice with those who rejoice. And these are our brothers and sisters in Christ. And, you know them way better than I do. A lot of people at Soul Church, actually, Rich, a lot of your friends there. But I know some of these guys, and, you know, I just want to celebrate with them. This is a miraculous thing, and it's a blessing to them, so it's a blessing to us. And I'm always keen to learn. You know, this is outside of what I'm used to, so this is a new experience for me as well. And
you mean John's not going to be in a cassock?
He's not going to be wearing his purple shirt, and you're carrying a staff.
Don't worry, I'm near you. Yeah, there'll be no kneeling mats either. You won't. There'll be no.
You're going to throw me in for full immersion baptism or something.
Don't worry, Matt. What about yourself, Dan? What are you looking forward to?
I think I'm looking forward to seeing. I've followed the story a little bit, and I'm looking forward to seeing it actually in person, to actually see what the building feels like. I've been on building sites of other, you know, big projects, and I've got that little bit of vision of, oh, you know, this will be the next step for us. And so it's kind of like a nice, you know, I guess to walk into somewhere that's a few years ahead of us. It'll just give me a little bit of vision. So I'm excited to see that. And also, I feel like I'm quite an understated leader in the way of, I'm not super exuberant with a celebration and that sort of stuff. So I'm excited. I know, Rich, you always push me to celebrate and to mark the moment. Yes. So I'm quite excited to watch how we're with
the world's best,
that.
By the way.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be good to watch and see how they, like, rally, you know, the celebration around it as well.
But, now, and same to you know, totally echo what you guys have said as well. I'm excited for that. I think for me as well, I'm excited about just, John and Chantel are extraordinary and the team are extraordinary, but ultimately they're just ordinary, faithful guys who God's used to do something very significant in a city that I think Norwich is the most godless city in the nation. They've described it before, like reviews that have gone on. Not like Google reviews, but like, you know, proper like university studies. Yeah. And there's just this sense of, even in amongst it, like God's doing great stuff. And I'm really excited for that. Excited for my friend John, who's just been a cheerleader of my life for many years. And I'm really excited for what God's done with them. And I think, it, like you guys, it gives hope that things can be done. You know, I walk around my city and I look and I think, not just that buildings can be built, because that's one form of what we're seeing today, but lives can be transformed in radical, unique ways. And I love that, what John's doing. And if it could be replicated in where you live, Dan, and just the replication being people full of faith doing extraordinary exploits for God, is what I'm excited about. So thanks so much, Matt, for being on. And we're going to come back onto this on the journey on the way home and get everyone's point of view. We good?
Yeah.
All right. Speak to everyone soon. I have so enjoyed doing these. That was a brilliant conversation. Hope you enjoyed it. It did great, wonderful work inside me. And what great friends both Dan and Matt are. But yeah, jump over episode 2, where we capture our kind of excitement and our thoughts, really, finishing off. So that's all live as well now. So go check it out.